हरे नाम सहना सहना सहकर तेजस्वी नावे नमस्त मेषाई
Dushmanta here is, Shakuntala is gone with his son, back to Dushmanta, and he's denying that he knows her, knows anything about this son, everything like that. So then she's giving so many nice instructions, right, concerning the wife, concerning the son, and then from that, then she's expecting that he will make a proper decision as a good king, right? So can we remember anything here about the, what are instructions about the wife? Anyone can say something? Yes.
Second half of the husband?
Second half of the husband, yes.
She's also the guru or the father in religious activities?
She's a guru or father in religious activities, okay. Anything else? Yes.
She's dharma, artha, kama, and like, the proper performing of the duties with the wife, then mukti can be easily obtained.
Okay, so she helps in dharma, artha, kama, and so through that, then one can obtain liberation, yes.
And she's the best friend?
She's the best friend, okay.
That the wife would be religious and the husband should be spiritual?
That the wife is religious, the husband is spiritual, okay. Anything else? No? Okay, and about this, yes? Yes, that when the husband himself takes birth through the wife as the son. Yeah. Okay. So then, and then on the son, yes, saves one from the hell called Putra, and he's called Putra. Very good. Okay. Anything else?
Give joy to the father when he comes to rest on his feet.
Yeah, gives joy to the father when he comes and embraces them like that.
Best thing to touch.
Best thing to touch. Yeah. Okay. Better than cheese, actually. Okay. Yeah? Okay. So then now we'll continue with her. Mana has said that there are five kinds of sons, those begotten by oneself upon his own wife, those obtained as gift from others, those purchased for a consideration, those reared with affection, and those begotten upon other women other than upon wedded wives. Son, okay, so, right? So these are all different ways that a son is obtained, right? You have your own wife, you have your own child, or she comes with a child, or someone, you know, out of friendship gives you their child and says, here, you like Kunti, right? Was given by Vasudev. No, not Vasudev. Whatever. Maybe it was Vasudev.
No.
Sister. Oh, it's, yes, his sister. So their father to Kunti Bhoja. Right? So that's how she became Kunti. Well, her name actually was Prita. Like that. So like that, out of that, or just you like the person and so therefore then you take care of him, raise him like a son. So these are all different ways you can get a son. Right? Sons support the religion and achievements of men. Enhance their joys and rescue diseased ancestors from hell. It behooveth thee not, therefore, O tiger among kings. See, even though she's angry, she's still respecting him. Right? Does that make sense? So always in this, even though it's that, they'll still say, deal properly. But they say what they want. You say what you want in a proper, you know, attitude or proper words. Therefore, O Lord of earth, cherish thy own self, truth and virtue, by cherishing thy son. O lion amongst monarchs, it behooveth thee not to support this deceitfulness. The dedication of a tank is more meritorious than 100 wells. A sacrifice, again, is more meritorious than the dedication of a tank. A son is more meritorious than a sacrifice. Truth is more meritorious than 100 sons. 100 horse sacrifices had once been weighed against truth, and truth was found heavier than 100 horse sacrifices. So therefore the Brahmins sticking to truth, even though they haven't done 100 horse sacrifices, then it's the same qualification as the king who has done those sacrifices. O king, truth, I ween, may be equal to the study of the entire Vedas and ablutions in all holy places, right? So if you speak the truth, means according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then that's equal to having studied the whole Vedas and gone to all the holy places. Right? So that's why truth is considered important. Yeah? There's no virtue equal to truth. There is nothing superior to truth. Right? But here, truth doesn't mean necessarily just facts. It means facts in consideration of the time, place, and circumstance according to Shastra. Does that make sense? Because truth means facts, how you see it, what you're perceiving, or what you've heard from others, right? Or what you've heard from the scriptures, studied in the scriptures, or what you've realized through practice of following the scriptures, right? Does that make sense? So, or what one has heard from the spiritual authorities, okay? So, that being truth, then you have to see that especially what you perceive or what you've heard from others is filtered through Shastra, right? The truth of the Shastra. Otherwise, it may be factual, but it's not actually true, because true means it's not illusion, right? It may be a fact, but it's illusion. Right, because it's on the bodily platform, or it's bodily attachment, or things like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why truth can't just be say, just I feel like this, so that's the truth. No, but your feeling like that is also due to your false ego, and it's nonsense. So your truth is nonsense. So what do we need to speak nonsense for? It may be true nonsense. Right? But it doesn't make it worthwhile. Right? It must be proper truth. Does that make sense? So that's actual truth. Right? In other words, if you have a very narrow definition, it simply means facts. Right? But the actual definition means facts according to time, place, and circumstance based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? You have a person, they yell, they scream, they cry all the time, you know, they don't talk to you like that, you know, they just sit there. You could say this is a pretty self-centered, selfish, lazy person. But if you take it into consideration that the living that person's only 6 months old, then you might say, well, hey, they're a kid, that's what they do. You understand? But as far as fact goes, you can make it very terrible. Does that make sense? So facts only have use when they're run through the filter of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra according to the time, place, and circumstance. Yeah? Okay? O King, truth is God Himself, right? Because Krishna is the supreme truth. Truth is the highest vow. Therefore, violate not thy pledge, right? Because he pledged. It wasn't just he didn't say anything. Then there's no obligation, but he made a pledge. O monarch, let truth and thee be even united. If thou placest no credit in my words, I shall of my own accord go hence. Indeed, thy companionship should be avoided. Right? In other words, if you don't speak on truth, therefore we don't, there's no need to have a relationship. In fact, a person that doesn't speak truth shouldn't be associated with. So if you don't speak the truth, then on my own I'm going because you're bad association. So it's not that you've thrown me out. You're not a person that's worth being around. In fact, I'm leaving. All your ministers, everybody else should leave too. You know, it's like you don't deserve to be associated with. But thou, O Dushmanta, that when thou art gone, this son of mine shall rule the whole earth, surrounded by the four seas and adorned with the king of the mountains. Means, says, in any case, he's going to rule the world. And so you're here, you're not, and when you know, you're here, you accept, great. But if you don't, when you leave, he's coming and taking over this kingdom. You know, now because you're his father, there'll be no problem. We won't, you know, make any, we won't come and take over your kingdom. But when you're gone, know it, this guy's going to rule the earth. Vaishampayana continued, Shakuntala, having spoken to the monarch in this wise, in this way, left his presence. But as soon as she had left, a voice from the skies, emanating from no visible shape, thus spoke unto Dushmanta as he was sitting, surrounded by his occasional and household priests. Occasional means the priests that do the occasional yajnas and those things. Right? You know, you do a horse sacrifice or you do these other sacrifices. Those are done by the occasional priests. These are the Shrauta priests. Right? And then the dailier who takes care of his daily puja or daily yajnas and all these little things like that. Right? So you get the Nitya Naimittic priests. Right? Nitya means daily, Naimittic means occasional. That's something on that? You know, like daily, you chant. The Mangal Arti take a shot. Naimittic is Ekadasi, you know, Janmashtami. Does that make sense? So both are there. His preceptors and ministers, right? So here preceptors and priests are different. Priests do the rituals. Preceptors gives the instruction, gives the training. And the voice said, Mother is but the sheath of flesh. The son sprung from the father is the father himself. Therefore, O Dushmanta, cherish thy son and insult not Shakuntala. O best of men, the son, who is but a form of one's own seed, rescueth ancestors from the region of Yama. Thou art the progenitor of this boy. Shakuntala hath spoken the truth. The husband, dividing his body in twain, means in two, is born of his wife in the form of a son. Therefore, O Dushmanta, cherish, O monarch, thy son born of Shakuntala. To live by forsaking one's living son is a great misfortune. Therefore, O thou of Puru's race, cherish thy household son born of Shakuntala. And because this child is to be cherished by thee, even at our word, therefore shall this thy son be known by the name of Bharata, which means the cherished. Hearing these words uttered by the dwellers in heaven, the monarch of Puru's race became overjoyed and spoke as follows unto his priests and ministers. Hear ye these words uttered by the celestial messenger. I myself know this one to be my son. If I had taken him as my son on the strength of Shakuntala's words alone, my people would have been suspicious, and my son also would not have been regarded as pure. Vaishampayana continued. The monarch then, The monarch then, O thou of Bharata's race, seeing the purity of his son established by the celestial messenger, became exceedingly glad. And he took hold of him, that son, with joy. And the king, with a joyous heart, then performed all those rites upon his son that a father should perform. And the king smelt his child's head and hugged him with affection. And the brahmanas began to utter blessings upon him, and the bards began to applaud him. And the monarch then experienced the great delight that one feeleth at the touch of one's son. And Dushmanta also received that wife with affection. And he told her these words, pacifying her affectionately. O goddess, my union with thee took place privately. Therefore, I was thinking of how best to establish thy purity. My people might think that we were only lustfully united and not as husband and wife. And therefore, this son that I have, that I would have installed as my heir apparent, would only have been regarded as one of impure birth. And dearest, every hard word thou hast uttered in thy anger, have I, O large-eyed one, forgiven thee. Thou art my dearest, and the royal sage Dushmanta, having spoken thus unto his dear wife, O Bharata, received her with offerings of perfume, food, and drink. Right? And King Dushmanta then bestowed the name of Bharata upon his child, and formally installed him as the heir apparent. And the famous and bright wheels of Bharata's car, invincible like under the wheels of the cars owned by the gods, traversed every region, filling the whole earth with their rattle. And the son of Dushmanta reduced to subjugation all kings of the earth, and he ruled virtuously and earned great fame. And that monarch of great prowess was known by the titles of Chakravarti and Sarvabhauma. And he performed many sacrifices like Chakra, the lord of the Maruts. That right? Means, just like, in other words, 100 horse sacrifices. And Kanva was the chief priest at those sacrifices. In which offerings to the Brahmanas were great. And the blessed monarch performed both the cow and the horse sacrifices. And Bharata gave unto Kanva 1,000 gold coins as the sacrificial fee. It is that Bharata from whom have emanated so many mighty achievements. It is from him that the great race called after him because of him that everybody in his line are called Bharatas. Like Arjuna is called, O son of Bharat. Right? And even though Bharat's quite a long time before. And the Bharata race, and in the Bharata race there have been born many godlike monarchs gifted with great energy. And like unto Brahman himself, their number cannot be counted. But, O thou of Bharata's race, I shall name the principal ones that were blessed with great good fortune, like unto the gods, and devoted to truth and honesty. Section 75. We're still saying Sambhava? Yeah. Vaishampayana said, here now as I recite the recorded genealogy that is sacred and subservient to religion, profit, and pleasure, of these royal sages, Daksha, the lord of creation, Manu, the son of Surya, Bharata, Rudu, Pulu, and Ajamida. I shall also recite to thee, O sinless one, the genealogies of the Yadavas and of the Kurus and of the king of the Bharat line. These genealogies are sacred, and the recitation is a great act of propitiation. That recitation conferreth wealth, fame, and long life. And, O sinless one, all these I have named shone in their splendor and were equal unto the great rishis in energy. Pratetas had 10 sons who were all devoted to asceticism and possessed of every virtue. They burnt of old by the fire emanating from their mouths several plants of poisonous and innumerable large trees that had covered the earth and become a source of great discomfort to man. Right? In other words, he burnt the trees because they had taken over the earth in that area, which was so you can't do farming and other things like that because they were so big and that no one could deal with them. after these 10 was born another named Daksha. It is from Daksha that all creatures have sprung. Right? Prajapati Daksha. Therefore, is he, O tiger among men, called the grandfather. Born of Prajetas, the Muni Daksha, uniting himself with Virini, begat 1,000 sons of rigid vows, all like himself. And Narada taught these 1,000 sons of Daksha the excellent philosophy of Shankya as a means of salvation, right? They all took sannyas. Right? Not exactly what Daksha had in mind. So we see here is this Daksha is born in the Pachetas. Originally he's the son of Brahma, but something happened that then he wasn't. Right? Like that. And O Janamejaya, the lord of creation, Daksha then, from a desire of making creatures, begat 50 daughters. And he made all of them his appointed daughters. Right? So he thought, okay, I make sons, because they had done before. I think it happened twice. Right? So then he decided, well, if I make sons, Narada's going to preach to them, make them into Paramahamsas, and they'll go off and not get married. So he decided, if I make daughters, they'll get married. Narada's not going to preach to them. Right? So, but he made him appointed daughters so that their sons are actually considered his sons. Right? He made all of them his appointed daughters so that the sons might be his sons also for the performance of all religious acts. In other words, they're the son of the father, but as far as religious acts go, they're obliged to do the sacrifice for the grandfather. Right? And he bestowed 10 of his daughters on Dharma and 13 on Kasyapa. And he gave 27 to Chandra. What are these 27?
Nakshatras.
Yeah. Who are engaged in indicating time. And Kasyapa, the son of Marichi, begat on the eldest of his 13 wives, the Adityas, the celestials endued with great energy and having Indra as their head, and also Vivashvat, the son. And of Vivashvat was born the Lord Yama, and Martana, and Martanda, Vivasvat, another name of the son. Also begat another son after Yama, gifted with great intelligence, and named Manu. And Manu was endued with great wisdom and devoted to virtue. Right? Also we see Shani, Saturn, is also his son, so he's a great devotee. And he became the progenitor of a line. And in Manu's race have been born all human beings who have, therefore, been called Manavas. And it is a Manu that all men, including Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and others, have been descended, and are, therefore, all called Manavas. Subsequently, O monarch, the Brahmanas became united with the Kshatriyas, and those sons of Manu that were Brahmanas devoted themselves to the study of the Vedas. And Manu begat 10 other children named Vena, Drishnu, Narishyan, Nabhaga, Ikshvaku, Karusha, Saryati, the eighth, a daughter named Ila, and Prishadru, the ninth, and Nabhagarishta, the tenth. They all betook themselves to the practices of Kshatriyas. Besides these, Manu had 50 other sons on earth, but we heard that they all perished, quarreling with one another. The learned Pururavas was born of Ila. Right? Because you hear about Pururavas? He was the one with Urvasi. And he was the one at the beginning of Treta Yuga started sacrifice. Like that. So that's why he's born. It had been heard by us that Ila was both his mother and father. And the great Pururavas had sway over 13 islands of the sea. And though a human being, he was always surrounded by companions that were superhuman. And Pururavas, intoxicated with power, quarreled with the Brahmanas, and little caring for their anger, robbed them of their wealth. Beholding all this, Sanat Kumar came from the region of Brahman and gave him good counsel, which was, however, rejected by Pururavas. Then the wrath of the great rishis was excited. And the avaricious monarch, who intoxicated with power, had lost his reason, was immediately destroyed by their curse. It was Pururavas who first brought from the region of the Gandharvas the three kinds of fire for sacrificial purpose. And he brought thence the Apsara Urvasi also. And the son of Ila begot upon Urvasi six sons, who were called Ayus, Dimat, Amavasu, Vridyayush, and Vanayush. Oh, and Setayush. And it is said that Ayush begat four sons named Nahusha, Vrida Sharman, Rajin Gaya, and Aeneas. On the daughter of Swarabanu, in other words, that was his wife. That was Ayush's wife. And O monarch, Nahusha, of all the sons of Ayush, being gifted with great intelligence and prowess, ruled his extensive kingdom virtuously. And King Nahusha supported even the Petris. We'll meet Nahusha later as a big giant snake like that. He caught Bhima, so Bhima was so strong that Bhima couldn't get out of this. And King Nahusha supported even the Petris, the Celestials, the Rishis, the Brahmas, the Gandharvas, the Nagas, the Rakshasas, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas. And he suppressed all robber gangs with a mighty hand. But he made the Rishis pay tribute and carry him on their backs like beasts of burden. Right, that was in, I think, in the heavenly planet. So that's how he got cursed to become a snake. And conquering the very gods by the beauty of his person, his asceticism, prowess, and energy, he ruled as if he were Indra himself. And Nahusha begot six sons, all of sweet speech, named Yati, Yayati, Sanyati, Ayati, and Dhruva. Yati, betaking himself to asceticism, became a muni, like unto Brahman himself. Yayati became a monarch of great prowess and virtue. He ruled the whole earth, performed numerous sacrifices, worshipped the Petris with great reverence, and always respected the gods. And he brought the whole world under his sway, and was never vanquished by any foe. And the sons of Yayati were all great bowmen, and resplendent with every virtue. And, O king, they were begotten upon his two wives, Devayani and Sarmishta. And of Devayani were born Yadu and Purvasu. And of Sarmishta were born Drahyu, Anu, and Puru. So here you get the Yadus and the Purus, right? And, O king, having virtuously ruled his subjects for a long time, Yayati was attacked with a hideous decrepitude, means he got old, destroying his personal beauty. And attacked by decrepitude, the monarch then spoke. Good word, right? He became decrepit, then attacked by decrepitude. The monarch then spoke, O Bharata, unto his sons Yadu and Puru and Twardavasu, Drahyu and Anu, these words. Hear, ye dear sons, I wish to be a young man and to gratify my appetites in the company of young women. Do you help me therein? To him his eldest son, born of Devayani, then said, What needest thou, O king? Dost thou want to have your youth? Yayati then told him, Accept thou my decrepitude, O son. With thy youth I would enjoy myself. During the time of a great sacrifice, I have been cursed by the Muni, Ushanas, Shakra, which is Devayani's father. O son, I would enjoy myself with your youth. Take any of you this my decrepitude with my body, and with my body rule ye my kingdom. I would enjoy myself with a rejuvenated body. Therefore, ye my sons, take ye my decrepitude. But none of his sons accepted his decrepitude. Then his youngest son Puru said unto him, O king, enjoy thyself once again with a rejuvenated body and return youth. I shall take thy decrepitude and at thy command rule thy kingdom. Thus addressed, the royal sage by virtue of ascetic power then transferred his own decrepitude under that high-souled son of his, and with the youth of Puru became a youth. While with the monarch's aid, Puru ruled his kingdom, right? And whoever it was that took his old age became the king. And we see here is also, so whoever took it ruled the kingdom like that. So I think he for 1,000 years had his youth. So that means he was already practiced for 1,000 years ruling the kingdom, right? Before he took over the kingdom, because then he got back his youth and continued his kingdom. Then after 1,000 years had passed, Yayati, that tiger among kings, remained as strong and powerful as a tiger, and he enjoyed for a long time the companionship of his two wives, and in the gardens of Chittaratha, the king of the Gandharvas. Right? Chittaratha, that's Arjuna's friend. The king also enjoyed the company of the Apsara Vishwachiti. Right? She's one of the big six. What is that? But even after this, the great king found his appetites unsatiated. The king then recollected the following truths contained in the Puranas. Hear these well. Truly, one's appetites are never satiated by enjoyment. On the other hand, like sacrificial butter poured into the fire, they flame up with indulgence. Even if one enjoyed the whole earth with its wealth, diamonds and gold, animals and women, one may not yet be satiated. It is only when man doth not commit any sin in respect of any living entity, in thought, deed, or speech, it is then that he attaineth to purity as that of Brahman. When one feareth nothing, that means, in other words, one is not afraid of his identity, of being a servant of Krishna. Right? That's fearless. Otherwise, if one has any other identity, it will be lost, so one will be fearful. So the only way to actually be fearless is to identify as a servant of Krishna and be fixed in that. When one feareth nothing, when one is not feared by anything, in other words, no one else has any fear from you because you deal with everybody properly, right? So first, only others will not be afraid of you if you're not afraid. You understand? Other people will like you if you're comfortable with yourself, right? If you're nice to others, only will they be nice to you. Right? In other words, it starts with yourself. If you wonder why others are dealing, that's because that's how we deal. Does that make sense? So, he's mentioning here is that... does not commit any sin in respect of any living entity. In other words, he deals with all living entities properly. Right, seeing them all equal. Then that person, he's attempting for that, he can become fearless, and having become fearless, no living entity will have fear from him. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, when he acts so that he is not fearful to anybody, then he becomes fearless. And when he becomes fearless, then no other living entity is afraid of him. You see the difference between the first and the third? First one is he's acting in a way that he's not fearful to other living entities. They still may be afraid of him, but he's not acting in a way that they should be. By that action, he becomes fearless. Then they naturally are not afraid of him. Does that make sense now? Yes, no? So in other words, this proper etiquette towards everybody else, that's what one is trying to attain, because that person then is liberated. Right? Does that make sense? When one feareth nothing, when one is not feared by anything, when one wisheth for nothing, when he has no needs, when one injureth nothing, it is then that one attaineth to the purity of Brahman, means you're transcendental. The wise monarch, seeing this and satisfied that one's appetites are never satiated, set his mind at rest by meditation and took back from his son his own decrepitude. Right? Here he says, satisfied that one's appetites are never satisfied. That's the satisfaction. In other words, you're convinced. You think, well, if you just do this, then it'll be satisfied. Just do that, it'll be satisfied. And just like this. But by dealing in that way, that's why he wanted his youth back. By interacting, it doesn't mention here, it'll mention later, when they get into details about Yayati, that this 1,000 years of when he was enjoying himself was all according to religious principles. He never broke any religious principle. Right? And so then doing that, that means with knowledge you're performing activities based on Shastra. Therefore, he got the understanding that you can't satisfy your appetites for material pleasure no matter what you do. So he had 1,000 years and he was emperor of the world. So that means he was not short of any facility. And he came to this conclusion. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what you can get. You won't satisfy your desires, but you'll be satisfied that they can't be satisfied and be able to therefore give them up. Does that make sense? Now, he is acting here as a king, a great, you know, a Rajarshi. But as a devotee, then the power of the holy name is stronger, so you don't need 1,000 years to work out what he did. But you do, you have to put in the time and effort. Does that make sense? You have to make the endeavor. And making the endeavor, then by the power of the holy name, by the grace of Guru Sadhu and Shastra, then one will come to realize that desires can't be fulfilled. So there's actually nothing. And why can't they be fulfilled? Because there's no substance there. Right? It's not real. What we're really looking for is Krishna. Does that make sense? So he's just come to that first stage of understanding. There's, you can't fulfill the desire, so therefore why work at it? And it was realization. The devotee has more is know that what you're looking for in that desire is Krishna. And so then approaching Krishna in that way, after a while you start to see that, well, actually it's Krishna that's nice, not the way of trying to approach Krishna through sense gratification. Does that make sense? So you start to see, and then you see, and the material can't be satisfied, but it's so satisfying serving Krishna. And so in this way, then it falls away. But one has to be making the endeavor. Right? Does that make sense? Because you have to make that commitment. Right? It's voluntary. It's choice. And giving him back his youth, though his own appetites were unsatiated, and installing him on the throne, he spoke unto Puru thus, "Thou art my true heir, thou art my true son, by whom my race is to be continued. In the world shall my race be known by thy name." Vaishampayana continued, "Then that tiger amongst kings, having installed his son Puru on the throne, went away to the Mount of Bhrigu for devoting himself to asceticism. And having acquired great ascetic merit, after long years he succumbed to the inevitable influence of time. He left his human body by observing the vow of fasting and ascended to heaven with his wives." Right. So he went with his wives. Yeah. So they naturally get half his credit. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the girls are always looking for someone who is situated properly in Krishna consciousness, who is situated properly in the performance of their duties and all that. Does that ring true? Does that make sense? The woman will get half of the man's credits. So, what do you think? Would you recommend that a girl marry a boy who is lazy and doesn't like to do anything? No. One who doesn't know how to properly follow etiquette. One who is unknowledgeable in the Shastra. One who deals roughly with others. One who is only interested in sense gratification. Right? One who doesn't have a vision in life. Doesn't know where he's going. What he's going to do. Any of these sound good? Would you recommend a girl marry such a person? All he's got going for him is he tries to look cool. Right? Or he's got some gizmo or a gadget or some piece of clothing or something that he thinks makes him attractive to women. Is that the kind of person the girl should marry? So think about it. Right? Do you want to grow up to be one of those guys that you're recommending the girls never marry? Yes? No? No. Okay. Then, what are we going to do about it? Something? Okay, so that means you know everything. All you have to do is do it. and then everything will work. Right? It's like this. If you don't wash the pots, or you're lazy, or you don't respect your superiors, or you're rough with your juniors, or you bother the other living entities, is anybody else actually going to suffer from that? Or are you the one that's going to suffer from that? Does that make sense? Who? Yes. Does that make sense? So you're only hurting yourself. So do you like to hurt yourself? No, so then think about it. Right? Very simple, very straightforward. It's not rocket science, right? Or neuro brain surgery or anything. Right? Very simple, straightforward. You do it, it works. You don't do it, it doesn't work. Yeah? So it's your life, it's your choice, and you can do with it whatever you want, and it works now. Oh, here, just for further on this, if you've never played a mridanga before, right, and I hand you a mridanga, then you can sit down in the bhajan and play all the fancy beats and do all the stuff, right? No. Why not? You haven't learned. And okay, so I sit you down one time, and in one time I show you all the beats. Then you can play everything, right?
No.
No. Why? You need practice. Ooh, practice. Okay. And practice means, okay, you practice one day, 2 days, and then you're expert, yeah?
No.
You practice many years, right? So, therefore, that's a mridanga. So why do you think that something that's alive is going to be easier than a mridanga? Right? Mridanga sits there. Whenever you decide to pay attention to it, you pick it up. When you don't, it sits there. Hari Bol. Try doing that with a person. Got it? So that means long years of practice. You want to be someone who is, let's say, dutiful. It means you got to practice that for a while. You know, you have a good service attitude. You have to practice that. You know, you can deal properly with others according to etiquette. That's practice. You're respectful. You know, you sense control. You're focused. It all takes practice. Right? And now in the practice, when the first day you sit down, then you're playing one of the beats and the tehais and all that as your practice, right? Yes? First day. What do you sit down and play? Tere keta, tere keta. Exciting, right? Okay, so that's like washing pots. Exciting, yeah? Okay, so that's the point. These seeming things, so what do you mean? I can wash a pot. No, you can't. Because washing a pot means in the right attitude you can do it. Yes, you know the science of washing a pot. And you can explain it to that younger kid that you want to exert your authority over and get him to do it right. Yeah, that you can do. But as far as actually washing it yourself in the right attitude, happily, for Krishna, can you do that? So that's the point. If you can't play Tere Keta, then can you play one of the lois? Or one of the tehais, or right? That's the point. Everything's based on tere keta. So everything's based on that humble, submissive service attitude. That's a brahmacharya. Humble, submissive service attitude. You can write it down if you like, unless you got one of those, how you say, what's it called? Shrutidhar, yes. Okay, got that? Everything else comes out of that. Humble, submissive, service attitude, right? Tadvidi pranipata pariprashna sevaya. That's knowledge. That's gurukul. That's training. Humble, submissive, service attitude. You have that, you'll make it in anything. You can become the richest man on the planet, most powerful, most knowledgeable, you know, best at anything if you have these three. You don't have these three, you're not going to be the best at nothing. And don't worry, you won't even be the best bum. Jagai Mari already got that down. You know, so even that you won't be the best. Once Prabhupada, devotee was telling Prabhupada, "Oh Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen." And Prabhupada just looked at him and said, "You're not the most anything." Like that, ooh, okay. You know, because I'm so humble, I'm coming to Prabhupada and say, "Oh Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen." So I said, "What do you mean? You're puffed up. You're not the most anything, right? Even fallen, right?" So look forward. If you can't get its humble, submissive service attitude together, look forward to a long life, or maybe short life, depending on how pious you are, of mediocrity. You understand mediocrity? Ho hum. Nothing special, not going anywhere. You exist. Okay. Jai. He breathed. He breathed out. Oh, he blinked his eyes. Right? Bow. Right? Sounds great? Sounds like that dynamic life you want for yourself. You know, the future. You know, the future is there in my breathing and blinking my eyes. Yes? No? Okay. So, do we understand this? Yes or no?
Yes.
Are we nodding our head because we know that by practice this is when we're supposed to nod our head? Or you're nodding your head because you actually understand what we're saying? You sure? And now are you nodding your head because you know you're supposed to nod your head? Or is he not? Got it? This is all that we're trying to teach. Everything else is there to create a form in which you can utilize your brain, utilize the mind and heart, utilize the body. In other words, body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. They're mediums, right? Certain basic skills are there. They're useful in this world, right? It's good to know a little language, a little math, right? It helps, right? A little bit of geography. You know that you're in India and you're not in New York, right? So, like that. It's good to know. But basically, other than the basic, everything else is according to what is your nature and ability and interest. Right? Some basic Sanskrit. But more than that, you have a nature. Learn it. There's so much you can do with it. The more you want to learn the English or math or Jyotish or... Does that make sense? But it's all useful. Right? The rest is just facilities for what works for you. But the point is unless you know who you are and you're working, you can't do anything. Does that make sense? So Gurukul is simply trying to awaken the understanding of who you really are and what you have to do, knowing that. Does that make sense? That's what it's for. It's simply trying to wake you up. That's all. Because once you're awake, you will do the right thing. Unless, of course, you would rather go back to sleep. Right? You know, then it's, I think, then you take, what is it? The blue pill, right? Okay. Section, what are we on? Any questions on this? Yes.
No,
something before. What did Yayati do with his youth as according to religious principles? Means because he said here he wanted to spend his time with his wives and you know, just enjoying the facilities that are there that can be enjoyed in youth. You know, they would sit together, talk together, you know, you sit on the side of the pond. You take nice things to eat, you hear music. You understand? So, you know, he's listening to, you know, proper ragas, he's eating proper food, he's, you know, proper times of the day, according to the season, he's wearing, you know, appropriate clothes, he's speaking in appropriate ways. You understand? So everything he's doing is according to Shastra. You know, so he's not eating something at night that you shouldn't eat at night, but you should only eat in the day. You know, he's not going out and spending time in the pukur in the winter. He's doing that in the summer, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, you're in the summer palace in the summer. You're in the winter palace in the winter. like that. So it's all according to Shastra, according to our Ayurveda, according to the Jyotish, according to the Vastu Shastra, you know, according to the Dharma, the Kama Shastras, all these different things. So in this way, whatever he's doing is correct. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Anything else? Yes.
I wanted to just also for Bharat Mara.
For Bharat Mara.
It says that he got the title of Chakravarti.
Chakravarti,
and,
yes.
And
Sarvabhauma.
Sarvabhauma. And from him the dynasty was called Bharat Vamsha. So also India got the name Bharat from
him. India got the name Bharat from that. No, see, yes, no, India is left with the name Bharat. In other words, Bharat was this part of the earth that we can see, right? Because the Bhumandal is bigger than what we see, right? The ocean is 80,000 miles. We can only see 25,000 if you go around, right? But if you go down, you only get, 8,000, 10,000. It's much, much bigger. So there's much more of the Mandala than what we can see. So what we can see, that's Bharat, because it says Lord of the 13 islands, right? So that means all the main islands and everything that are there that we would count. So that would probably mean the whole of, what do you call it? Australasia. All those islands out there, Malaysia, Indonesia, all these different things. Because there, Sumatra is there, it's mentioned in the Shastra. India used to trade with them. And like this. So it means the whole earth. Does that make sense? Like that. So, but with time, then it becomes smaller and smaller. So even just recently, then there's the partition in India. So that means your Pakistan, East and West Pakistan, or Pakistan and Bangladesh were separated off. Right? Before that, Burma was part of the thing. The British dropped it because it was too much trouble. It floods every year. It was a disaster. So it wasn't viable economically, so they dropped it from, the kingdom. So slowly, slowly, it just gets smaller. Prabhupada says it'll get smaller and smaller. So all that's left of what we call Bharat or India is UP. Uttar Pradesh will be all that's left, because that's where most of the stuff, and they're the most into Bharat Mata Ki Jai and stuff. So much of your holy places are there, and the Ganga and Jamuna and everything like that. So that's all that'll be left. In the future, everything else will become separate countries. Janamejaya, section 76. Janamejaya said, "O thou of the wealth of asceticism, please tell me how our ancestor Yayati, who is the tenth from Prajapati, obtained for a wife the unobtainable daughter of Sukra," right? How did Yayati get Sukracharya's daughter? Right? Because Sukracharya is of the heavenly planet, so his daughter is going to be of there. How did he get hers? His? "I desire to hear of it in detail. Tell me also, one after another, of those monarchs separately who were the founders of dynasties." In other words, so many of the kings were listed now. So the ones that were founders of dynasties, right? So Puru is here, Yadu, Nahusha, Yayati. These main ones. Also the Bhagavatam will mention them, the Puranas mention them. They'll give the list of the names, but the stories are always about these ones who start the dynasty. Puru, Ravas, all these ones. Vaishampayana said, "The monarch Yayati was in splendor like unto Indra himself. I will tell thee in reply to thy question, O Janamejaya, how both Sukra and Vrishaparvan bestowed upon him with due rites their daughters, and how this union take place with Devayani in special." Right? In other words, both of them were there, but Devayani was the main queen. She was the special queen. Right? "Between the celestials and the asuras, there happened of yore frequent encounters for the sovereignty of the three worlds with everything in them," right? The demigods and the demons are fighting over who is the lord of the universe. "The gods then, from desire of victory, installed the son of Angiras, Brihaspati, as their priest to conduct their sacrifices. while their opponents installed the learned Ushanas as their priest for the same purpose, right, Sukra. So the demons had Sukracharya, the demigods had Brihaspati. Because without the priest, then nothing works. So the Kshatriyas respect the Brahmins, they follow their guidance, they perform their sacrifices and perform their sadhana. That's why they have the power to rule. They don't do that, then they lose it. You see, any king who doesn't do that, they lose. And any king who does it, they win. And between those two Brahmins, there are always much boastful rivalry. Those Danavas assembled for encounter that were slain by the gods were all revived by the seer, Sukra, by the power of his knowledge. Right? So when they fought, the demons that were killed, then Sukracharya brought them back to life by his Mitra Sanjeevani mantras. And then, starting again unto life, these fought with the gods. The Asuras also slew on the field of battle many of the celestials. But the open-minded Brihaspati could not revive them. Right? So this is the problem, right? You kill the demons, you thought you won the battle, then they bring them all back to life, and they come back out again, you know, yelling and screaming and everything. Because he knew not the science called Sanjeevani. Revivication. Okay. Which Kavya, endued with great energy, knew well. Kavya is another name of Sukracharya. And the gods were, therefore, in great sorrow. And the gods in great anxiety of heart, and entertaining a fear of the learned Ushnas, then went to Kacha, the eldest son of Brihaspati, and spoke unto him, saying, "We pray, court to thee, be kind to us, and do us a service that we regard as very great." Oh, we pay court to thee. Means we come to you, with some discussions, some desires, some needs, and you're like the authority, the one who can get it done. So that's court. Right? So the king holds court, in which then his ministers and people of the kingdom come, and they come with different points of law, of the management of the kingdom. So many things may come up, personal difficulties. And so he gives the decision, he gets something done. So here they're going, in court to Kacha, the son of Brihaspati, with a need. This is all the demigods. We pay court to thee, be kind to us and do us a service that we regard as very great. That knowledge which resides in Sukra, that Brahmana of immeasurable prowess, may that make thy own as soon as thou canst. In other words, the knowledge of Sukracharya, get that from him. Thou shalt find the Brahmana in the court of Rishabharvan. He always protects the Danavas, but never us, their opponents. Thou art his junior in age, and therefore capable of adoring him with reverence. Right? Because you're younger, then you can go to him and, become his student. Thou canst also adore Devayani, the favorite daughter of that high-souled Brahmana. So he had many daughters, but Devayani was the favorite. So he says you can also deal very kindly and nicely with her, because you're young. Indeed, thou alone art capable of appreciating them both by worship. There is none else that can do so. By gratifying Devayani with thy conduct, liberality, sweetness, and general behavior, thou canst certainly obtain that knowledge, right? So they're saying that through pleasing Devayani, you'll get the blessing of the father, because whatever the daughter wants, the father gives, right? The father, that's the thing, is that the daughter gets the fullest kindness, right? Like that. More than is given to any other of the ladies of the family, right? So whatever she wants, then Sukracharya will give. So that knowledge that the demigods want him to gain will only be gained through pleasing Devayani. Right? And he's going to do that through conduct, behaving very nicely, not being punked. Liberality, right? Being very knowledgeable in the Shastras and very open-minded and broad-minded. Sweetness, in other words, very gentle and very nice in how you deal. And the general behavior is all very pleasant. Okay? So through that. So then tomorrow we'll hear how he goes and gets this knowledge from Supacharya. Yes?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.